Is record. All right, so it's today. Today's November
14th.
14th. Right? What day of Cheshvan is it? I'm not sure. Let's see. About the 10th of Cheshvan, something like that. So again, we're talking about fundamentals of Judaism, but this is a really important idea. Again, you know, this is a very free-ranging conversation, so that we don't... we pretty much talk any topic we want. There's no syllabus. I get so upset. I listen to these billionaires talk about how technology changes the world, and it's nonsense. It doesn't change technology. What does technology do for you? The real issues of life. Again, if it's medical, okay. So they were saving people's lives. Certainly, there's good advances in it. But that's not what they mean when they talk about technology. Right. The fact that you talk to 1 people. So before you wasted time with 200 people, now you waste time with 1 million people. It's just beyond bizarre to people to think so immaturely that technology changed things for me. Like, I don't know. I look at these ostensibly smart people saying this. And say, are you kidding? The real core issues, certainly from the way the Torah perspective, the real core issues have always been. Hi.
Hey.
Hi. Shalom Aleichem. What's your name?
Master Klein.
Klein, thanks. Nice to see you.
Hi, Jack.
So we just started our discussion. You know, and again, this is a very broad-ranging conversation, so...
Someone's got notes.
Pardon me?
Someone's got notes.
Yeah, I bring my notes. It makes me look much better. Because otherwise it would look like I'm completely unprepared. and this way, it might be true, but I don't know if you admit it. So, yeah, we were just talking about, I wanted to really talk about Avraham Avinu tonight and a follow-up to the question that we had last week. But before we go, we were talking about how these ostensibly smart people talk about how technology changes the world. And it doesn't change any of the core issues that a person confronts. It doesn't, and we'll talk about that. One of the questions, and actually this is a good segue, because one of the questions that I think Michael asked last week, you know, he had trouble, and he's not the first person who had trouble because
Michael,
you know,
or Avraham?
Michael Silverman.
Yeah.
I thought Avraham.
What?
I didn't know who he was.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah. Yeah.
Had a problem.
No, Avraham didn't attend last week, as far as I know. Right? Avraham Avinu.
Michael's if
he
on
did,
a cruise right
he
now.
Did, you know.
I don't think he has any problems right now.
Right. Well, maybe you never know. The problems don't go away from you, you know. You can't escape them, so it's an illusion. One of the illusions we have, you want to go on a vacation. What you want to do is you want to walk away from your problems, but they usually come along for the trip. Right? That's my own personal experience. I don't know. You know, sometimes the change will help, but most of the real core issues that really drive us to distraction, they don't go away. They don't go away. So Michael last week asked the question, and he had difficulty with a concept that's really it's his fundamental. The official title of the class is Fundamental Concept Judaism. This is the fundamentals you get. Chazal, if you really understand how the Torah perspective is, and you read Midrash and you read Gemara, there's a universal. Now, this is not, you know, not open to this debate. You won't find debate among the Rishon and Macharon. The core idea is Olam Chesed Yibana. God runs a world of Chesed. And the problem is, you look around the world, and that requires some painstaking analysis and openness to see that in the world today. You know, I have never, you know, look, the Jewish people suffer like no other people historically. One of the points I've always made in my talks, when we talk about Tisha B'Av, a streaming of talks, is that if you go to any other nation in the world, and I think I said this Shul's night when I was giving Shurim, you know, I gave Shurim all night in Shul. I don't know if you were there, I don't remember. But one of the points I made is if you go to other nations in the world, talk about their greatness, talk about their museums, right? So in France, you go to the Louvre. In New York, you go to the Metropolitan, okay? In Washington, go to the Smithsonian. In Israel, where do you go? Yad Vashem. Think of the difference. It's not a celebration of achievement. It's a commemoration of tragedy. Well, yeah, an achievement on a very different kind of level. There's no country in the world that has its major museums dedicated to their tragedies, their historical tragedies. It's a very unique perspective that's different about the Jewish people. So now, if you have to speak in front of Holocaust survivors, for example, and how they suffered. And you talk about Noam Chesed, that's a hard conversation. And I understand it. We live in an insular generation, that you live in Wesley Hills and you think Carefree Lane is the way to go, right? You know, it's just such an anomaly. You know, I saw that line and I said, boy, this, they're out of touch, right? Because that's not the world. So Michael had difficulty when we talk about Echa. But the single biggest idea that Avraham Avinu saw, and we remember we talked about this a week, he saw a world of chesed. That's at odds with the way we see the world. Just the reality. But that's how Chazal, you read the Midrashim, almost every, they paint a picture of chesed. And that, you know, that's part of the challenge of understanding basic Judaism. They don't see it the same way. Part of that is because you have to accept on faith as a different person. Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't look the same. And Avraham is a wonderful example of that. Who's the paradigm of chesed in Jewish tradition? That was Avraham Avinu. It's chesed. You get this picture of a man who's just had a surgery. Third day, he's 99 years old, and he runs to God. Come on, it doesn't exist stuff like that. Right? Get that picture. He's 99. And when he goes to the food, he won't abide by asking his son to do it. Almost everything he does itself. Because he wants... Do you know anybody like that? Have you ever met anybody like that? And yet, look at his life. Look at the story of his life. If you were writing a report in the New York Times, well, New York Times would be full of this, even in the Wall Street Journal, right? Even though you're writing a report, how would you paint it? It's a tragic life. For years, for decades, he desperately tries to earn children. As a young boy, his father turns him in because of his beliefs. And they try to kill him. And by luck, he escapes, right?
By luck. His hand.
Yeah, okay, that's not what the Wall Street Journal, that's not what the New York Times Survey says, right? Pence was writing the article, right? That's the problem of history, right? And then, so God tells you, go. Go out to land, escape, go out there, right? And what happens? There's a famine. So God just told you where to go, and now you don't know what to eat. Is there any more fundamental question than that? What am I doing? Who am I listening to? How do you get that, right? And then a Kodesh Baruch says, okay, go to Mitzrayim. They'll give you food. And what happens to his wife? And then when a Kodesh Baruch gives him the promise, he says, all your children will be enslaved for hundreds of years. How's that for a number? Right? And then, after Baruch Hashem, finally you get a son, Yishmael. And what happens? You got to send him with, throw him away. Send him away. Anything more painful? I finally has a child, 86 years old, he has a child, and he sends him away? And then a Kodesh Baruch Hu tells me you got to do Mila. The Chazal say he was afraid to cut himself. God has broken him. We say it every day in davening. God guided his hand. Whatever that means on a metaphysical level. So how do you paint that picture? Tell me about the life. Just not having children alone is a painful story. I mean, my Rebbe had no children. You know, that's, you know, he had thousands of students, very close students. But no children. That's a painful life. And he's talking about chesed? And then the Akedah. So you believe in the God of chesed? That was the challenge. Do you accept God in that? So Michael's question, you know, that's what made Avraham Avinu here was. He gave him the challenge. So life is not about not seeing challenge. The idea of Chazal and Avraham Avinu, what he saw is that that's all for man's betterment. And that's a hard thing to swallow. But if you accept that, then the whole world changes for you. Everything you do. But Yaakov, right?
Just back up, Jack. Back up there 1 second. But Hashem command, say it again.
Then God, after everything, finally he gets a son through his wife, Sarah, who he tried so desperately for. And he says, he's told to shacht him. Just the notion that would destroy most human beings. It would destroy them. And you couldn't blame them. You couldn't blame them for losing their minds. What is he? He runs to do the command, this pillar of chesed? Different world. We're living in different, very different worlds, guys. Very different worlds. But he paints a picture to everybody. This is the Olam Chesed. So, yeah, I understand that this, it's called cognitive dissonance, right? When you see the world differently than it is. But the entire, almost all of humanity has this cognitive dissonance in reality from Chazal's point of view. From the Torah perspective, we are cognitively dissonant from the reality of the world. And if you can shift your perspective and see a world of chesed, everything looks different. It's a whole different world. It's a different picture, right? Because all the challenges that we see as tragic or painful, someone else might look and say, that's an opportunity. I use that example probably three times in the last several weeks of this year, this class. If you, I beg your indulgence, I'll repeat it again, okay? You have to go to war, okay? You have to go to war. Those of us who remember the Six-Day War, right? You know, say, okay, Nasser closes the Suez to Israeli shipping, right? Closes the gate. And then he creates this unified command on the Arab world. So it wasn't just one front, all fronts. And I know this is tricky, and there's some good reason. Okay, so now Israel's facing a war not on one front. Remember, nobody knew how that would come out. You remember the challenges of the time, right?
I
lived through it too, right?
So to me, I
was busy collecting money for the yeshiva and the base matters in Toronto when it happened. It wasn't easy.
I know exactly where I was.
Okay, so I also remember where it was. Okay, so now you're talking about Israel is facing front, not challenge, not just on its western front. On the northern front, on the eastern front, completely surrounded by armies, so many times greater. Now you could look two ways, and it's a Chazal. Kaddish Baruch did you a favor. You could have had to go fight for months. You think it's crazy, but there's a Rashi like that in Devarim. The Rashi says it. The Jews are coming to collect, and they all of a sudden, the Kaddish Baruch says, what am I going to bother the Jewish people to go through 31 different wars? We'll bring them all together. Great! There's 100,000 soldiers there instead of just 5,000. I'm so excited. Who thinks like that? That's not the way you look at the world, Kevra.
They fought for 6 days, and on the seventh day they rested.
But right? But would any one of us here today say, "Wow, what's wrong with the world? It's got to be a good thing." Who would say that, right? But that's the Rashi. Now that doesn't mean the Rashi that they pulled it. But understand in perspective afterwards, you understand that. Hey, wasn't it a bracha? You know, no, seriously, that's not the way we look at the world. But understand that difference explains a lot of things. What's important? What's not important? How we look? Why isn't it? How's the Mishmaim? That was Avraham Avinu, and that's a very different perspective. Most of us have questions. Now again, that doesn't mean we didn't suffer. There were times we suffered. You know, it's almost painful to talk of the suffering of the Jewish people Holocaust. But the Kleisenberger Rebbe, Zichron Lebracha, said. He lost his family in the Holocaust. The story goes, I saw it in a sefer, the story goes, he was in shul once after the war, right? And they were reading Parshas Kisavo in the Klolos. And he stopped and he asked the chazan to be read it especially loud. He says, which of these things did we not experience? I mean, he lost his family. So, you know, I don't think there is another example, and again, it's something I'm repeating myself but it's just relevant. There's another example in all of humanity where a 3,500 year prophecy came right in front of our eyes. You see it, right? But getting back to, pardon me, Michael?
He was in the DP camp that I was born in. He was my son.
He was your son? Really? Really? Wow. He was your son, Dick. Wow. Wow. So, okay, but you have another example in all of human history where a 3,500-year-old prophecy came before in front of your eyes? I mean, literally, you read it. You know, I have trouble reading the Parsha because of the stories, and yet, you know, this is
how I have trouble seeing how people cannot see it as a miracle.
Yeah, yeah.
You mentioned the
Sabbath Hasidim,
I just don't.
You come from Chayichas, you once told me, right? Where do you come? Your family?
My father was from Levertov.
I'm sorry, can you?
Levertov, they live in.
From Lublin.
Yeah, he was. He got a bracha from the Chofetz Chaim. 1920.
Wow. Wow. So you know, so again, it's hard not to say that. On the other hand, you look at the story; it's written for you right in front of your eyes. So, you know, so what do you say, right? But of course, Baruch Hu says he's there all the time. He just, you know, this is part of the national historical experience of the Jewish people. It's part of our experience, and it was predicted. It was there. So Avraham Avinu, though, who goes through this kind of life, is talking to everybody about. Hey, he's trying to bring Torah to everybody. He's trying, hey, everybody, hey, this is Minas Shemayim. And he changes the world on a question. Because I'll say he changed the whole world. You know, there are people who quote, I saw the Rambam quotes, say for Avigdor Miller, I know in his books, quote, that Avraham Avinu, he's quoted in historical books. I once read in one of Avigdor Miller's books, we're talking decades ago, and I can't swear that it's true, I think it's true, that Avraham Avinu taught mathematics in Egypt. It's certainly possible. Again, I don't know. I saw the Rambam quotes the Rambam, who says that much of Eastern and Western philosophy was attributed to Avraham Avinu. Again, I don't know that it's true or not, I can't say. But so he goes out and changes the world on a question. He says, but it's all an accident? Because, you know, we grow up, we're used to things. That's how we change the world, which really comes back to our original discussion. He said, what really matters? Okay, what really matters is how we live the world and what we do. That's the Jewish perspective. And if you don't at least ask the question, where are you? What are you doing with your life? You come, you spend the time here, you don't do anything with your life, and then you move on. So that's what I meant when our original discussion that was started was about technology. I mean, to use it as a tool, so now you can get your sperm online, or you use it to find out where the latest minion is, or all that good stuff. Okay. But your internal core, that doesn't change. And that's really the struggle, because most of our decisions are not easily accessible to us. If you allow me, I'm going to quote a book that I've quoted in Shir a couple times. And actually, let me start. In the 1800s, Michel Salanter, who I've quoted so frequently, he was a student of the Vilna Gaon. More than anyone, he was responsible for certainly in the literature world, for the contemporary outlook of orthodoxy towards the world. What that means is he looked at a world where Jewish ethical behavior needed some improving. Still does. I don't think there's any disagreement there. So he started a movement. And what's fascinating, his tremendous insight. And I just finished rereading his collection of letters. He didn't write much. Very, very challenging to read his letters, not just because of the Hebrew. It's they're cryptic and terse, and he puts profound ideas couched in special terms, and you really have to spend time in it. I think it's the 31st letter. He writes an idea that most of our behavior is driven by, the only way to say it is by the subconscious. And he's clearly, because it's out of our immediate control, which is actually been proven. There's a book I was just passing around my family that I read recently called Subliminal. It's by a former nuclear physicist who's now a neurosocial scientist, who shows how most of human behavior is driven by things you don't know. And most of the times when someone asks you why you did something, they can prove it. They actually have some fascinating and sophisticated experiments that can actually prove that what the guy said is not the truth, and they're not lying. They don't know, and they've proven it. If you have any time at all to read a really interesting book, of course, at the end he goes off the deep end because he doesn't believe in God, but that's a different discussion. You know, he gets most of it right, but he loses it. But if you have any time at all to understand that you're not in touch with what really drives you, and that's this week's Parsha too, because what's fascinating is, as I'll say, that all the difficulty of Lot, understand Lot, who was Avraham Avinu's nephew, and at a certain point we know that there were difficulties because his shepherds were not as careful, honestly, as Avraham. So Avraham says, you go to the right or go to the left, I'll you go here, I'll go here, he gives him the choice. And Rabbeinu Machai says, but he chose it, he didn't go right or left, he went to stone. Now that's a story, that's a decision that he carries for infinity. Because ultimately, because of that, you know, his illegitimate children, his daughters lived with him, and this, and the nations of Ammon and Moab forever carry that stigma. Moab means for my father. That embarrassment, historical embarrassment, because he left. And Chazal say he left because really, and there was an undercurrent of feeling he didn't want to be part of whatever I'm represents. It was a rebellion. That doesn't mean to say he stand up and said, oh no, I don't want to be part of that. He couldn't do that. Right. Emotionally, he probably couldn't do that. But all of us have our internal drives. We want to do the right thing. So we find the excuse that lets us do it. And then we think, well, no, the pasture land was better over here. The business opportunity was better. But the reality is what should have driven that decision was not that. We should have driven the decision, where am I going and what will the influence of the society be? That challenge, that's the real work. The real work is, okay, do you know yourself? How much do you really know about yourself and what drives you? And what Michel Salanter introduced is a method by actually changing the internals, which he talks about, very fascinating. And it's extraordinary to see someone who wrote this book 140 years ago, 135 years ago, and that's more, it's got at least 150 because he didn't write it the last year. He lived from 1808, I think, to 1888. He didn't write it the last year of his life. This was just a life's work. And he's talking about how you change your conscious, because if you can actually change how you feel about things, then your internal decision process changes. That was the Muslim movement. People don't know, they think it's about fire and brimstone. Fire and brimstone is the furthest thing in the world from what Michel Salanter had in mind. Fire and brimstone does nothing. So you see this big miracle. aphorism, I guess, about, you know, fire and brimstone. So you remember Chazal, the Chachamim say at Har Sinai, the sky's open. And even Shifcha, what was Shifcha? A person who had no, you know, a housemaid, saw a nevuah that even the greatest of our Nevi'im didn't see. Sky's open. Cheskel and Buzi, they saw clarity. But Rechaim Shlomi said, but after it went away, she was still a Shifcha. She wasn't a Navi. It didn't change that. It doesn't. Nobody. She didn't walk away and said, "Oh, now I became one of the great Nevi'os." Nevi'os. It didn't. That doesn't change you. You see a miracle. You see a miracle. The Six-Day War. You see a miracle of Entebbe. You know, I've quoted Rav Moshe Feinstein. Another discussion. We've talked about miracles. That's a nice galui. Entebbe. The odds of that. I always think the United States couldn't get its helicopters off the ground in the desert. And we got a whole, say, the whole 100 people, right? 1,500 miles away.
It's like the election.
Look at that. Well, I don't know.
Today's miracle was the election.
I'm waiting. I certainly wasn't pro Clinton. I just want to make sure I don't get blown up in the next months because somebody got angry at some other country. That's all. I'm observing judgment on that one.
Nothing like that. Nothing like that. He's going to become a very, very good president.
I certainly hope so. But it's all the Yad Hashem. So where am I going with that? So
the whole thing was Yad Hashem, and God is not going to stop in the middle.
And Chazal say that this decisions of Ramban says it a number of places in this Pirshin Chumash. Decisions of rulers are not in their hands anyway. It's Ulam and Shemayim. They think them. So the other point I'm making is that also in this Parsha, so Lot went away, but what drove that decision, if you would ask them, the business opportunity is better. But the reality, that's unconscious. And if you want to know what your life's work is, identify your inner conflicts, find out what really driving you, and then change them. Change them, improve them. You don't be, Avraham Avinu didn't start off, he wouldn't be a great tzaddik if he started off as a naturally born Baal Chesed. That doesn't, someone who's naturally a Baal Chesed, that's great. That doesn't make you great. So you got it from the womb, big deal. If you weren't like that, if your natural tendency was not to be kind, and then you're kind, that's a challenge. That's a challenge. If you naturally lose your temper, and you learn how to calm your temper, that's greatness. That's greatness. If you're not sure about Gaiva, and you become humble.
It comes with age.
No, it comes with work. Unfortunately, too many people get old, and he's the same incorrigible person when he's 90, when he was when he was 80, when he was when he was 20. That's, he missed a whole opportunity. That's so going back to our discussion about technology.
Wait, not to dwell on that, but does it get into how to change?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I'll give you the short version. The long version requires, you know, separate discussion. But he actually, there were three schools of thought that came from his students. I was trained by one of his, just one of his greatest students was known as the Altar of Slobodka, Tully Zvi Finkel, some long-distant relative of that Rabbi Finkel who was killed, who was murdered by the terrorists in the shul, which neighborhood was it? You know what I'm talking about.
A year or two ago.
He was a great yeshiva. He was the Slobodka yeshiva. In that yeshiva, he was a student of the Sosol Adler. Almost every major literature yeshiva in the world today learned in that yeshiva. Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Bruderman, Rav Huttner, and my Rebbe's father, Rav David Leibowitz, was the Rosh of that kola. Was the head of kola. He was, Rav Yaakov considered him his Rebbe, and they actually had a particular, they all took his teaching and slightly changed it, but their basic idea of Yisrael to read his writings was that your internal makeup can be changed, but not the way you think by just saying, oh, I'm going to do this, because you don't even have access to it. But let's say all of a sudden you realize, you start studying the Torah viewpoint of what a human being is, the God of the sudden, like we've talked about, and you start to gain an appreciation that a person is a much more chashiva thing that we're led to believe, is a much more, is a spiritual creation that demands tremendous respect, how Chazal were careful. And every day you spend 15 minutes a day quietly reflecting and talking about the Chazal that told the importance of a human being. Eventually, piece by piece, that's the story of Rabbi Akiva, with a drop, drip by drip, you start to change how you feel about people. And if you start to change how you feel about people on the inside, you're going to be much less likely in the future to get angry at somebody or to treat them improperly. And that's true about all Chazal. So they actually set up at a certain point study houses, quiet, candlelit. Now I once said to my Rebbe, I said, if he was live today, we'd probably have movies and dramas dedicated to that. And I found, you know, and later I saw the Moshe Chaim Luzzatto actually wrote ethical dramas. He was one of the great Kabbalists in the 1700s. And to that effect. So if you can dramatize that, but on a daily basis, every spend 15 minutes a day, how important people are, or how important chesed is, or how important gaiva is, depending on your particular issue. And there's actually a workbook. Funny, I was a Bachur Yeshiva, the name of the sefer is called Cheshbon HaNefesh. Personal calculation, personal counting, right? And I'm looking at the book, and it actually has 13 basic traits. And you work on each trait, being moving quickly, take care of mitzvahs, not being arrogant, 4 weeks a year, and you can actually mark down every time, you can, like an accountant would mark down. And I later discovered that was actually created by Benjamin Franklin. There's no attribution to it, because probably who in the free world is going to buy a book of personal improvement, especially if you read his biography, which I did. He was really not morally the kind of example to look for. But his personal improvement program, that's what made him one of the greatest diplomats in American history. They took that, they adapted it, they had the haskama, the approbation of Rishon Salanter, and they published it. And it's a fascinating work. Actually, if I had some money and had something to work with, I would actually create a fund to produce that for a smartphone, because it would lend itself to tracking our behavior during the day. And the funny thing, you start tracking what you're, okay, I'm working on, let's say, arrogance. I said something, it shouldn't, or being kind, not losing my temper. You start tracking that, and every day you spend 10 minutes a day. I was in base medicine 15 years, and during the course of year, I see people walk in one way, and then walk out different people. It's not obvious. You don't see it over a day, over a month, or even over a year or two, but over a lifetime. It's phenomenal what it can do. That was his viewpoint, and that's actually confirmed on this book, Subliminal, which is fascinating. So the key idea of Moser was not that you're going to hear Frank Bronson change. Is that on a daily basis, if you take seriously Chazal, you can actually bring into focus a different perspective. And if you change the way you feel about something on the inside, you act differently. Because naturally, when you're inside, you say, wait, I can't do that. On the same level, and these are his words, paraphrasing, on the same level that your anger is coming from, same level there's a check on it, because, wait, it's not right. I can't do that. But it's a deeply held belief, and it becomes the same. So just, you know, to answer the question. And it's fascinating. So the real work of the human is changing how you are. And that's why all these great people like a Korach, why was he angry? He honestly, if had you asked him, do you think he was such a fool that he went and challenged Moshe Rabbeinu? Who would do that? the subtlety of the jealousy was deeply embedded in his subconscious. He didn't know it, but he's a Celtic Catholic because he should have, a man like him, should have spent his life and not be, and learned how not to be jealous. And that's why a person can help us. So that's the real challenge of life. Most of us don't even see that. Unfortunately, we're not even exposed to the ideas that, that drive yeshiva education, for example. You know, unfortunately, you get out in the business world, and it's hard to have time, but also even the perspective. What's really important? You want to know what's important? That's important. That's fundamental Judaism, right? Changing yourself. But most of us say, don't know how to do that, right? He had actually a plan. And it's not so difficult. He said, I spend 10 minutes a day reading those chazal, those stories that are meant to drive home a point. And the world starts to look different. You know? Okay, Kevra. So, you know, there are a couple other things I can mention here, but that really covered the basic tenets. Let me find my notes. Oh, yes, I just said we started the idea about Avraham Avinu. You know, he asked a fundamental question. He asked, that changed the world. But only if you care, you know? Nowadays, you know, who's asking questions? You go out, you do your thing, you don't even think. I quoted the Chazon Ish. It was very poetic in his writing, and his sefer on Emunah and Betochin. He says, okay, person, thank God, he's healthy. He had a good meal. He's not hungry. He has the manuka. He goes, takes a walk, and starts by. If he doesn't ask, what am I doing here? What is he doing? What he's doing with himself, right? You have to take 10 minutes, go for a walk, one starry night, and ask, what am I doing here? If you start asking the question, there's no stopping. And what's really interesting is that with Moshe Chaim Litzhak, I have this in that, I wrote up Pesach guides, Pesach Seder guides a couple years ago, because one of the fellow from the Shir asked me to. I think you've seen it, right? So I have that Pesach. So one of the points I quote is Rav Moshe Chaim Litzhak, and it's Mesil Zasharim. He says, Paro's drive to keep the Jews enslaved was not because he needed the work. That wasn't why. Because they didn't want them asking questions. He understood. If a Jew has time and he said, what are you going to do? He said, well, what am I doing here? That changes your world. You can't be a slave if you do that. Hey, what am I doing here? Right? So he makes the, it's not me, he makes the extension. It's like, you go to work morning to night. What am I doing? Where's my life going? Nobody in Zapotev says he showed up 9 o'clock every morning at job, left at 11 o'clock at night. Wow. You won't go to the basic chorus, the old amendments. You don't see that. Nobody talks. It does you no good. So what are you doing? But you know, it sounds funny, but it's not a joke. People, we spend our lives. I had the privilege. I've quoted him before. In fact, if I knew his yard site, I would say Kaddish on it. Really, a man, extraordinary how a man could have such influence on me. I knew him only a short time. I was rough in California, in Long Beach for a number of years, and I met someone introduced me, and I don't remember how I met him. His name was Ralph Alpert, all of a sudden. He was a man, he actually had a liquor store at one point in his life. He became a Baal Shuv at the age of 65. He had always been a good conservative Jew, and he realized there's more to it. And he actually tried to enroll himself in yeshiva. He was at the University of Los Angeles, where I have friends trying to sit and learn for a couple of years, and it really didn't go. It was very hard. You know, learning a whole day is hard, even if you're 16 years old. Certainly, if you're 65 years old, it's hard to learn a whole day. Certainly, you don't have the background. Even now, I spend a lot of my day learning. Some of my friends can't understand how I do it, and I say, I can't how they do it. You spent 15 years in yeshiva. How could you not doing it? So I don't get it. But he had a lot of trouble. So he decided, what is he going to do? He became from. He said he's going to go on campus. And he started an outreach program on Northridge, University of California at Northridge. You know the area? He started. He had hundreds of students. The guy was amazing. He's like a walking dynamo. I told you, I was walking once. I once spent Shabbos in his house when my family was here. And I couldn't keep up with it. I said, this is my, like, what is Avraham Avinu must have been like? And go and run. He was going to have a mitzvah to do. He walked. I couldn't run to keep up with him. The man was a dynamo. You know, he started it. So he told me, he said, what drove him to become a Baal Tshuva, because on his deathbed, his father said to him, with what did I waste my life? Mm. You know, that's a tremendously powerful life. He asked the question, what am I doing? So Avraham Avinu changed the world. He asked the question, You think this all? How did it all get here? Because somebody says, okay, what am I doing? If you don't ask the question, there's no conversation. But if you do ask the question, there's no stopping. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato writes in the Mishnah Sharon, that's what power was afraid of most. Because you can't keep a person a slave if you've asked that kind of question. Because then he starts searching. And Jewish people are irrepressible. Look at today, with the tiniest country in the world, we're the world, one of the world powers. Everybody's afraid of us. It's unbelievable. You know, I once heard Beryl Wine say, you know, the people, Jews run the world? He says, is that right? The reality is, we think it's anti-Semitism, and it is anti-Semitism, but the reality is, Jews run the world. We do. How do you explain a nuclear power, eighth nuclear power, and give us a couple of years, the Bezat Hashem, Kodesh Baruch Hu, to help call Israel? And there's no stopping the Jewish people. And they know that. And they know that, and they fear it.
Just yesterday, the news they showed, Israel invented a new thing for blind people to be able to see.
What was that? Really? I mean, every day, you know, I get the Startup Daily. You get Startup Daily? Startup Daily is an email. You can get it off of the Jerusalem Post. Amazing. Every day, the latest Israeli inventions. It blows your mind. It's unreal, the stuff they're coming up. They just had something for Alzheimer's, I saw.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. There's no people like the Jewish people, what they're doing. And look. It's unreal, right? It's unstoppable. So they're really right. I thought it was a phenomenal statement when I heard it from Rabbi Wine. Many years ago I heard it. He's right. There's nothing. So you start asking questions, there's no stopping the Jewish people. That's the key, though. You got to stop and ask the question. Stop and ask the question. Then you show up at a night set. Yeah, learning. It doesn't mean the other important to remember, we don't properly evaluate because we don't have this realm, John. The fact that you come to night say, you have no idea what that means from a Torah perspective. But you're not going to read about it in the New York Times tomorrow. Maybe even not even next week. Right? That's
from the New York Times.
Yeah, no, I haven't read it many. Yeah, actually, Friday, I bought it for the first time Friday in about 15 years. Because I just wanted to see what they're saying. And I see, yeah, that's why I don't buy it anymore. Unbelievable. Even Chris Wallace showed the headlines on it. You saw that interview? Shows the New York Times. What nonsense. I mean, what nonsense.
Impossible.
So you're not going to read it. But the media has that black view of the world. And that's not Jewish. That's not the Jewish view. Again, not a popular position. Hard to say because when someone is suffering, that's not the time to say it. And the Jewish people have suffered. On the other hand, we believe that behind all the scenes, there's a much more powerful motivator. And be full for this. And we're here for a reason. And that's why, you know, I said a shmooze at the bris of one of my grandchildren about a year ago. You know, I was Wednesday night. I was giving a shiur in Cheskinah, so we were learning Kibbut Aviyeh, the details. It's honoring your father and your mother. So I was really puzzled by the kalocha. Okay, we understand your parent spent sleepless nights raising children. There's nothing harder. But if you actually look at the Sefer Chinuch, the Sefer of Mitzvahs, carefully, it's very clear. If you are given birth by a parent and you never see that parent after birth in your life, you never see him again, the same halachas of Kibbut Aviyeh apply. And for years I couldn't understand why. And then I realized, and it's clear from the, without getting into the technical issues, clearly. So I realize, because the reality is what you owe your parent appreciation for is the opportunity of life. And there's no great, and that's why the Jewish people have such a strong view against euthanasia, for example, as painful as it is. Doesn't mean you have to take superhuman measures to keep a person who's suffering alive. That's a halachic question. But the basic idea of the value of life, one of the challenges today is you can't leave somebody alone in the hospital because they think it's a mitzvah to kill you. If you're past 60 and you can't ski anymore, life is not worth having. I'm not kidding. I had a lot of old doctors in my kilos. It's a big problem. It's a serious problem.
Over a certain age, and if the doctor feels there's no need, they just kill you.
Yeah. Well, no, I had doctors in California when I was a rub there. I had doctors tell me they have to watch out, but the nurses will actually kill the patients because they don't see it as an issue. They don't. That's so. Look, I was being monochrome level someone, I won't say that. And what they did was, in my opinion, murder. I was very upset. You know, I didn't say anything because it was after the fact, and there was no shyly asked. The Jewish view, because there's nothing more powerful and meaningful than life, because that's what we're here to accomplish, and the opportunity is profound. So, you know, I could talk more, but I think it's worthwhile. You guys clever. It's clever.
The Jewish
on euthanasia, if someone's like really sick and...
So there's a, you can't kill anybody, but for example, you don't have to take superhuman measures to keep somebody alive in pain. That's very different.
Because they're in pain, a lot of people, they're coming out with new ideas all the time on how to handle it.
So extending life unnaturally for someone who's really, his case is hopeless and is in pain, there's no value in that. I think you're most of them not for that. You know, you should ask, whatever God comes up as a question, you should ask a shaman. Yeah. But you certainly can't kill somebody. You can't administer something to allow them to die early. That's murder.
Right. Even a
second. And a second of life is only going to take away a year of life. There's no difference in how long.
How about unplugging the life support thing?
So that becomes very tricky. Some people say it's okay. Some people say not a simple issue. Once it's already there, you don't have to plug it in the first place. Once it's there, unplugging is a real shiloh. I don't want to get there because it becomes political. There are people who have said things that were not well accepted in halacha. People who are well known. So I don't really want to take a position with that. I think you ask your rav when it comes in.
Because things today, technology changes so often.
Well, Rav Moshe brought halacha for that into the 20th. Rav Moshe Feinstein, who his greatness was not just that he was brilliant and knew so much and was able to bring it to bear, but he actually dealt with many of the modern issues, and his halacha is still pertinent. The concepts he talks about, take superhuman measures, not the issue of brain death. You ask it rough for halacha.
I shouldn't say they're ignorant, but it's because of not knowing the true facts.
No, Moshe would never say that. No, the question
is... I'm talking about people that are questioning...
No, and I'll give you an example. J.D. Blyach, you're familiar with him?
Yeah.
He has one, some of the best works on contemporary issues in the world today.
Yeah.
He strongly disagrees. There's nobody more knowledgeable, in my opinion, than J.D. Blyach. You're right. You go to any Jewish bookstore, he has five volumes out of contemporary issues, many of them medical. Read his books. Fascinating. He's a brilliant rabbi.
Medical?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, genetic issues, brain death issues. I called him at the time because I gave a lecture on it.
Where people going back and forth, and I think
Wait, I want to stop the tape.